Welcome to the summer at AUC Institute for Islamic Studies. My name is Brian Wright, and I will be an instructor for the Islamic Law program that will be held later this summer. As part of the development of the program, AUC and the program's coordinators are putting together a set of sit-down interviews with the instructors and administrators, and will help give our students a better idea of what to expect in terms of classes and how to plan for their trip to Cairo this summer. For our first interview, we have Yasmin Amin, a PhD candidate at Exeter University, who will be leading our week on hadith studies and is currently finishing her dissertation on humor and laughter in the hadith. I started out by asking her to give us a brief overview of her background, her dissertation, and other academic projects she is currently involved in.
I am currently still a PhD candidate at Exeter University, the Institute of Arabic and Islamic Studies. I'm writing up my dissertation and I'm almost done, so I should be finishing my manuscript shortly. And my background. Okay, I am half German, half Egyptian. I've lived between Egypt and Germany all my life. I have gone back to school after my kids grew up and started with a postgraduate diploma in Islamic studies out of interest and to learn more about my religion. And then I got hooked. So from there, I went and I did a master's in Islamic studies. And from there, I went and I started a PhD in Islamic studies. And in all of those, my focus is on hadith on one hand and on gender on the other. And I am particular about the word gender because I am not really considering myself a feminist. But still, I am very interested in gender issues. As for the project I am working on now, this is difficult. First of all, there is my dissertation, which is humor and laughter in the hadith. And I have two side projects because I am the type of person who likes to have a few things going on at the same time in case I get bored. So I'm working on a project to locate missing women. To explain that a bit, there are lots of names of noble women, but there is very little written about as persons or about their history. But then you find in other sources, not the history books, but like books of poetry or, for example, in hadith collections, that they narrated hadith, that they were involved in poetry contests and won them, that they were rather liberal, they were unveiled, they changed their hairdos every week, and things like that. So my question, or rather my interest, became piqued when I discovered that, and I'm trying to find out why they were written out of history or why they were silenced. The other project I'm working on, I am looking into Aisha's age at marriage, because there are two different narratives. One that she was a child bride, that she got married at the age of 6, and the marriage was consummated at the age of 9. But there are conflicting narratives that she was married when she was 16, and that the marriage was consummated at the age of 19, which makes more sense to me, and is more ethical. And since the Quran says that the Prophet is the epitome of ethics, I cannot think that he would marry a child bride, more so that he refused to give away his daughter in marriage when she was a child herself. So that's my other project.
I then asked her to discuss more about how she became interested and involved in the hadith and what attracted her to this particular field of Islamic studies.
When I first started my Islamic studies, I was very much interested in the hudud laws because they were so brutal and of course, they don't really gel with modern times. But then when I took my first hadith course, I was hooked because I just couldn't imagine that the Prophet, being a prophet for 20 years, could have actually said everything that has been ascribed to him. Because al-Bukhari claims to have sifted through, well, there are two narratives. One is 650,000 hadith and the other a million hadith. So even 650,000 hadith in 20 years means that he did nothing but talk. And that kind of was a red flag for me, that most of them are probably not authentic and were put into his mouth later, even if al-Bukhari is considered the most authentic book after the Quran. So this is where my interest in hadith began to be awakened. And the more I studied hadith, the more I became interested, because there were so many different things and things that haven't been studied before. Like, for example, nobody looked at the stories in the hadith. Nobody looked at the dialogue in hadith. Nobody looked at the different methods of hadith narration. Like, for example, when you have an omnipotent narrator who knows the thoughts of the people inside the text of the hadith, the matn, and he knows that she felt sad or she felt bad or he was disgusted or things like that. So I want to look at the hadith from many different ways, and not just to use it as a text, but also to use it anthropologically, what it can tell us about the people at that time, their interests, and so on, especially when you try and trace a single hadith in its various versions, which I did with one hadith in my master's thesis. I had 195 Sunni versions and about 135 Shia versions of the same hadith, almost with the same isnad. But then when you trace the hadith historically, you get additions to the text, body, and so on. And I tried to find out why these additions came about and why some parts of the text were deleted. And it was almost always related to either a new genre of Islamic literature or a political situation or a military campaign or some ideology that was established at that time and things like that. So for a while, it seemed to me like the hadith was sort of like the social media today, drawing your attention to certain things or away from certain things. And that was really interesting to me, that at the end, hadith is not just a hadith.
Turning to the Summer at AUC program, I asked Yasmin to give us a brief summary of the course that she will be offering students this summer. As you will hear, and in true Cairo fashion, the evening call to prayer snuck into the background.
Okay, I am going to define the hadith and the parts that make a hadith, why the chain of narration is important, how we can judge the men in the chain of narration. I'm also going to point out the differences between Sunni hadith and Shia hadith. And then we're going to look at different genres in hadith and different time periods. And then we're going to also look at some of the versions and compare them to each other, and try to incorporate the context of the time and the context of the collector of the hadith or the author of the hadith collection where that particular version shows up, to try and determine why these versions grew or diminished in size. I am also going to teach the students how to judge a hadith, because not every authentic hadith is really authentic. And there are certain criterias. We're going to go through the criterias. There are two types of criterias. One is the type used by the Muslim scholars themselves, or as they are called, al-usuliyun. The most important one, of course, is to compare the hadith to the Quran and see whether they are the same or whether there are differences. And obviously, if there are differences, it should never be considered authentic, because the Prophet would never contradict God. And at the end of the day, the text of the Quran is divine, but the hadith is man-made, and emphasis is here on man, not necessarily the Prophet, because there are so many things that were put into his mouth later. We are also going to look at the other criteria established by modern scholars, whether they are orientalists, even though it is now considered a bad word, but I think that a lot of them really established a good criteria, like, for example, the Matnukum Isnad analysis by Motsky, which allows us to date a hadith, meaning that we can say approximately when this hadith started to be disseminated, which can help us to identify whether it is authentic or not. There are also some modern Muslim scholars that have criteria that help us in establishing the veracity of a hadith, most notably Al-Albani, who discovered that there is a category of narrators called Al-Majahil, meaning the unknown. So if you find in the chain of narration something that says, a man from the tribe of so-and-so narrated, then we have no idea who that man is, because in that tribe there were several men who narrated hadith, so we cannot know anything about his general moral character or his probity. And after we deal with the hadith criticism criteria, the students will be able to determine for themselves when they read a hadith whether it is authentic or not, and if not, what's the probability that it is authentic, because sometimes even in an inauthentic hadith, there is a kernel of truth in it. So, for example, the best known hadith ever is "Innam al-amalu bil-niyyat," that deeds are judged by their intention. But then all of a sudden you find that this hadith grows and the intention is defined. So if you are intending to fight jihad, then you get this reward. And if you intend to marry, then you get this reward. And if you intend to travel, then you get this reward. So you get different intentions. And of course, the more intentions you have, the more is the likelihood that the hadith was forged. Because there are so many statements by the Prophet's wives that say that he was very short, and that sentences never included more than a number of words that could be counted on one hand, not even two hands. So the longer the hadith is, the more probable that it is forged, or the higher the probability that it is forged. So this is more or less, in a nutshell, what the course is going to be doing.
As the final question for our interview, I asked Yasmin about what students should expect to come out with at the end of the course and any other comments she wanted to add. Specifically, I asked whether students could, following their week with her, be able to begin critically approaching the hadith.
Well, yes, but before they can do this, they have to know what a hadith is. And since the Shia hadith and the Sunni hadith are very different, they will have to learn about both of them first, because before they can even attempt to judge. There is no fear or no censorship in education. So I'm going to be giving a very liberal course, and all questions are welcome. So I am very much looking forward to the questions that the students have. In any questions, I'm not going to censor anything, and they can ask about whatever they want. And nobody is untouchable. So even if Al-Bukhari is considered the most authentic book after the Quran, that doesn't mean that we cannot critically examine it. Because at the end of the day, even Al-Bukhari was a human being, and all human beings can make mistakes. So I am very much open to critical analysis, and I actually encourage that.
That was our interview with Yasmin Amin, who will be teaching at the summer at AUC Institute for Islamic Studies this summer during the general program from June 16th to July 12th. Applications are open now, and see the links in the description below to find out more information.